Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
What can we learn from the different ways that dystopias are presented in the fiction that we love? We're going to be asking that question and more on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the priests of the geeks. I'm your host, Christian Ashley. You know me, you love me, and in fact, two other people who know and love me, some of them more than others. We'll get there. Barbara Early, how's it going, Barbara?
It's going pretty good.
That's good to hear. And of course, not to be mentioned last, as in he is the least, and you know, sometimes we least. Do think he is the least, but we love him anyways. John Early, how's it going, John?
It is going all right. We've had a heck of a week, let me tell you.
pre-recording, talking about that. Yeah, you guys have been through enough. Let's talk about something fun, you know, something fancy free and nothing to worry about like dystopias. You know, that'll raise everyone's spirits today.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, that'll really raise some spirits.
We may have a fourth person show up here. I'll remove their name just in case they're not able to come on. So for right now, you're stuck with the three of us. And before we go any further into our top three dystopian stories, guys, what have you been geeking out on recently?
Final Fantasy VII. I've been playing through that. It's all it promised. So much fun.
What's the name of the second?
I was actually playing it right before we dropped in to record, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What's the Rebirth?
Name? The second.
Rebirth, right?
Yes, Rebirth.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's going to be a third one, too, right?
Yes, I think it's supposed to be released in like the next 2 years. I'm not sure when the release date for it is.
Yeah, I played the first one. I'm going to wait on the second one for a bit because other things. I'm geeking out right now on the fact that I'm waiting on Dragon's Dogma 2 to load because it's being released for good tonight. And I love Dragon's Dogma. John was actually one who got me into that one, you and Dino. So I'm looking forward to more. So, John, how about you?
That's funny. Piggybacking on that, I've got Dragon's Dogma and the next one for the 360. And Barbara has yet to play that. We've got so many games on our list of stuff that
I know
that we need to play, but
I put a pre-order down for this and it was $100, so I better play it.
Yeah, you get your money's worth out of that. But as far as what's new, I guess probably Bad Batch. I've been really just enjoying the season, and I mean, you always have that feeling of, you know, it's going to end, but it's like just them finally completing all the loose ends, or at least most of the loose ends between Clone Wars and Rebels and things like that. It's really nice to see a lot of characters we know and love again, like kids.
Sounds like there's some dissent within the ranks because some people haven't watched it.
Like Commander Wolf and some of the other people that you know, you see in Rebels and you see in Clone Wars, but you're now you get to see them again in Bad Batch and kind of continues their character arcs. And I love that continuation and in Filoni we trust.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Bad Batch has been really good these past couple episodes. I am hesitant about the finale in that I know pain is going to happen. I just am curious about how much pain I'm going to feel.
Yeah. Is it going to be a now and then, here and there type of pain?
Oh, gosh. Or really bad?
We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of pain, we're talking about worlds where pain is kind of a thing. Not to say that our own world doesn't have a lot of pain in it, but these are way worse in many respects. Dystopia There are many different definitions of the word. I'm going to be a little more general and generous with how we interpret it here today. It's basically a setting in fiction, novels, anime, manga, video games, what have you, where we have situations where there may be a totalitarian government who is in charge of an entire area and enforcing strict rules on certain classes of people. It could be a situation where there's been a huge plague or something that has caused humanity to sequester itself away from everything. And in the process of that, we have now come to the point where we need, or we say we need, strong people in charge to make the big decisions and all that. We're going to be all over the place today. I'm going to go ahead and start us off by talking about my third pick of the day. That is Battle Royale. This is a Japanese novel that came out in 1999. Do you have any history with this at all? John, did I make you read this when we were roommates?
I don't think I've had any history with this one.
It's familiar. I remember you mentioning it. I don't think you forced me to read it. You did.
Well, I must really
hate you. I did live vicariously through you watching you play a lot of video games, but no, I'm not familiar with that one. I know you talked about it once because that's a basis for one of your stories, or an inspiration, I should say.
Yeah, that's going to be an inspiration for something that I have not finished yet. Just the same concept and all that, but in my own way of twisting things to make it legally distinct and not get sued. So there's that. That'll probably not see the light of day for many years from now, but it's something on the back burner. The basic premise of Battle Royale is that Japan as a government has kind of gotten stricter. There are various world reasons why it's not really focused on. It's just kind of like, accept the fact that Japan is a lot stricter than it is, that we have a form of government where we're censoring information, very 1984 moment here, which, by the way, will be on the list later on in some people's picks here. They control the media, they control the masses. And one of the things they do to keep the people in line is every year a random high school class is taken away to this island away from Japan and forced to kill one another. And they're allowed these different backpacks that don't know what's in them. It could be a baseball bat. It could be a knife. It could actually be an actual gun that's actually going to do some work. Or it could just be something completely and utterly useless that they're probably going to end up dying. And it's the whole point of why this is such a dystopia is the fact that people just let this happen. Not to say that there is no resistance at all, because as we learn along the way, not only are some people going to help create some resistance, but there are some people in Japan who don't want the status quo to remain the same. But in the process, the kids don't really care about that because they're kind of forced in the middle of combat. So we'll have people who were formerly friends try to murder one another because only one person can come out alive. And that person is then given gifts by the government, is kind of like exempt from being a part of it again. Like, ideally, they're not supposed to be randomly selected again, although there's some twists and turns along the way that I won't spoil that I really do enjoy. So what is a story like this, even though you guys haven't read it, what does it like say to you?
Let's see. It kind of reminds me of Maze Runner a little bit, when they like select these children to go undergo this kind of like test, or so to speak. But I mean, it's not quite the same, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of, I say fun, not fun for them, but
fun.
The tests and combat and all that stuff. It's a common theme in dystopian novels I've seen, where it's almost kind of like the Roman Colosseums, where it's like almost like a distraction or a warning against people.
It's one of those things where, how can you keep people in line? We target the children, and they're kind of at the right age to where they're capable enough, even without, yeah, Japan has way stricter gun control laws than we do here, that they would at least be able to perform some of the feats they're asking them to do, versus if they did like an elementary school or something like that. And it'd be way more horrifying in that regard, but it's still that we control you. And not only that, we're going to prove it to you by controlling your children. And we're going to sell this to people who are going to be watching it online. Now, obviously, there will be some picks along the way. Like, you know, you mentioned the Maze Runner. There's also the Hunger Games. As far as Suzanne Collins is concerned, she never once read Battle Royale. And I do believe her when she says that. It's not it's not an original idea to have this concept happening. And this, unfortunately, was around the time that Columbine did happen. I don't think that he was influenced by that because I think it happened. He was writing it before that occurred, but it kind of speaks to that whole sense of your school shootings and stuff like that as well. Barbara, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I was going to say it did remind me a little bit of the Hunger Games because like the setting more so like on an island, you're like by yourself. And then the fact that they're given like items to use on the island, it could be like a bat. It could be because like in the Hunger Games, I know they use like plants and poisonous berries and whatever, like the surrounding area, to their favor, to their unfavor. But I know a lot of dystopian stories have that similar, distinct, like main plot point almost, but that's kind of what, sparked my interest in the first place.
Yes. Yeah. I would say if you guys haven't read this story, it is tremendously well written. A lot of fun. John, you had something you wanted to add?
No, it's just, I remember this short story we were forced to read where it's like a lottery system where somebody was basically sacrificed from the society. I forget what it
was. Lottery.
You know what I'm talking about? Is that what it's called?
Shirley Jackson.
Yes. But where it's like always a, this is how they keep society going, how they keep people in line. And, you know, some people, I guess, would support the system or seemingly support the system, but this is their, in this universe, this is their way of controlling society and, you know, grabbing a whole high school class. That sucks. I mean, how would you like to be selected for that? It's like, oh my God, you know, you were going to dump you into the world of the Maze Runner and you're going to fight for your lives. Have fun.
Yeah, it's just twists and turns of like, hey, I used to be friends with these people. Can I still say that in the midst of this conflict? Can I make alliances with people knowing that only one of us is going to make it out of here alive? Like the way they play all those character conflicts is extremely well done. I really love this novel. The movie is pretty good too. It misses some things, but overall the movie is fine. So we're going to go on to our next pick, which is 1984. Now, John, was that your pick?
Yes, that was one of my picks, and I know me and Barbara had kind of a similar picks, but 1984 is mine.
Yeah, real quick, Barbara only had two on her list.
My third one was going to be 1984, but
yeah,
when he told me that, I was just like, just go ahead.
For the sake of it, I'll combine the two of you for this one.
Okay.
So both of you have your say. Go ahead, John. Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem. You can interrupt me anytime. Your sarcasm and everything's always more interesting than what I have to say. But anyway, 1984 is just the classic dystopian. When you think dystopian or you want to compare world politics to a, you know, communistic utopia or dystopia, 1984 always comes to mind and you always think of, you know, there's always some quotes that you can pull from it that always seem relevant. In whatever situation or whatever media you might be critiquing, you can always, you know, bring up, you know, Big Brother is watching the party is always right and there is no war and bossing say, you know what I mean? It's just a classic. It really is a classic.
Barbara?
No, I agree. It's always like, you know, having the feeling that somebody's watching over your shoulder is always like the feeling of like technology is always there, ever present, you're never alone kind of idealism. It's creepy in a way, but it's also for a lot of people necessary. But it's definitely a classic because I remember reading it several times throughout high school, actually. So it's, you know, not necessarily forced on society, but it's always there, kind of.
Yeah, for this one, it was actually surprising. I was never once forced to read this. I did it on my own in high school. That tells you how much of a nerd I am. And nerd. It's one of the, it's one of those, it's always on lists. And I was looking like books that you have to read. I remember doing that in like high school and it was on a lot of lists. So I said, sure, I'll pick it up. And it blew my mind. I think it really helped the fact that I was not forced to do it. I chose to do it so I could spend my time with it. I didn't need to write an essay on it. I didn't need to pretend that I understood about the themes, about whatever the teacher wanted me to think. It was really nice. As I know, we've all had to suffer through that before.
Yeah.
Write a 10-page essay on a book that you don't care about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, it changed some of my thinking about, you know, government and stuff like that, and how control can happen to just about anyone. And you get to double think, and you get to, you know, we've always been at war with Eurasia. And then, you know, we've always been at war with East Asia or Oceania, which one we're involved with here. I think we're in Oceania in this one. It's been a while since I have read it, to be perfectly honest.
So it's been a while.
Yeah. And how media controls stuff, mm-hmm. and how it'd be so easy. One of the things, because, I mean, at the end of the day, Orwell wasn't really let's put it this way. He wasn't pro-communist. He wasn't pro-fascist. He kind of hated both equally, as I understand his writing. So this could easily be a communist regime. This could easily be some far-right fascist regime. The whole point is, like, it doesn't really matter because those people have control. They're just using different means to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have control of the people, well, you are able to kill dissent. In mm-hmm. fact, it kind of reminds me, one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes is The Obsolete Man. And kind of like a very close to Fahrenheit 451 version, which is something I should add to my, goodness gracious, what was I going to say? Honorable mentions later on, mm-hmm. is the scenario, literature is only that which is approved by the government. Faith has been removed. They're burning Bibles and stuff like that. And the titular obsolete man is someone who is a man of faith, who has a Bible still in his home. And how does that work within that system? How do you revolt against the system? Well, we've had Christians had to do the exact same thing as we're getting our start in Rome and mm-hmm. then to Persia, then to Armenia and Ethiopia. There were always going to be people working against what we're trying to do by presenting the gospel, because Christ is anti this world controlling you. Mm-hmm. Now, Christians haven't always been the best at being like Christ and how we've handled our governments. And you can, in fact, put some Christian governments into very dystopian ideas. But you get something like 1984 where Big Brother is always watching, because, hey, quite literally, he is, because all he has to do is just get you to snitch on each other. They don't even have to do the work.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about that. And they got those, they're watching all over the place. They got the recording devices, and they're playing mm-hmm. state media all over the place on the posters and things, and the amount of surveillance and the snitches, all, you know, it's real bad.
Bad.
So your official opinion? Real bad.
John, they're gonna have a bad time.
Barbie, you have anything else you want to add?
No, I'm still laughing at John. No, I mean, fair just enough. The idea of, like, the technology and the misuse of media, and just because they do it here and now too. Like, we have, like, the news anchors and the news systems and what's far left and then far right. And then it's hard to find something that's actually based on truth. And it's, you know, scary in a way.
Oh yeah. I completely and utterly agree. That's why I get my news from like 4 or 5 different sources.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully at the end of the day, I'll get something close to the truth. Cause hey, if I go to MSNBC, I'm not expecting something favorable about Republicans or conservatives. If mm-hmm. I go to Fox News, I'm not looking for anything that's going to be real happy. We're real tight with the Democrats or liberals or anything like that. Like,
right.
If I go to the BBC, well, it's written from a British perspective, so I need to keep that in mind. If I go to Reddit, I'm definitely not going to see anything that favors God. Like, it's all over the place. Yeah. No, I absolutely never go there unless you really want to ruin yourself. But yeah, that's what he plays with here. And that's why that book has been as good as it is, as has lasted as long as it has, is because these are timeless themes. It's just the names of the places that change.
Correct. I think that, like, the idea of Ministry of Truth, where they go back and they doctor history. I mean, we can see that in, you know, real world applications, you know, like the Egyptians, if they didn't like a certain, you know, didn't like something mm-hmm. written on the wall, they would just erase it. And they'd said, oh, it never happened. Or, we won the Battle of Kadesh or whatever it was. It was.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just did whatever they wanted.
That's how most history is written. Like, history is written from the viewpoint of the winner, because mm-hmm. then it's like, you know, if you've lost, you can't really record history.
And that's just the history that survived to today. Mm-hmm. Like, we could easily have a lot more if, you know, things had gone a different way. But we have to kind of either trust the sources or be very, very skeptical about what they have to say. So, unless you guys have anything else you want to say about 1984, we'll go ahead and move on. Good? All right. So Next up would have been our mysterious fourth host pick. And if they do come back, we'll do Doro Hidoro. But even though I have watched it, and I don't want to take anything they want to say if they happen to come back. So I'll move on to our next pick, which is also a dual pick. Yay. By Barbara and John. That is Brave New World. So have at it.
Well, I really liked this one, actually. Like I said, I don't read dystopian stories very often. And I actually had to read this one for school also. But I really liked it. The whole idealism of separating by classes, but also because they're separated by intelligence. But they're separated by intelligence, like, because they were created that way to begin with. It's like an idea of purposely segregating, you know, the alphas from like the betas, and then all the way down to the omegas and stuff. It's horrifically fascinating in a way.
Yeah, it's a society of like test tube babies, and it's like completely micromanaged. And again, the society expects you to act a certain way, behave a certain way. They even create the rivalries, you know, artificially. You know, they joke between the betas or whatever. And it's just, yeah, it is fascinatingly horrifying where it's like, oh my gosh, like the society is like, you know, creating things. And, but that the part that grounds you is the human discontent from some of the main characters where they're just like, you know, this sucks. This is weird. And then when they encounter the native peoples, so to speak, of that world, I was going to say, yeah. But the stark differences between like, you know, a regular society and then this weird biomedical police state type of thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. This was another one. I surprisingly was not forced to read this. So I read it on my own.
Nerd.
Blame the North Carolina school system, I suppose. Huh. Yeah. I also don't remember too much of this. I remember enjoying it at the end of the day, but the plot threads don't really come together in my head. I do remember, you know, the way they handle different people being born in the separate sense. And like, you're this class, if you're this, or your class if that. And that's a very frightening thing because once again, this is being written very early on in the 1900s. And we've evolved way past that as far as science is concerned. So it's something that could easily happen. We end up with no designer babies, with as things go with, we can remove certain aspects from children. We're not fully there yet as far as genetic engineering and the like is concerned, but we're heading towards it. And that's something to be concerned about when it comes to does that still make us human? If we can control every aspect of ourselves, and is that playing God? Is that something we should do? Or is it something like, could we avoid, if someone has a gene for, I don't know, muscular dystrophy or something like that, is it ethical? Is it right to, you know, remove that possibility from their bodies? But then you get into things, well, I want my child to have blue eyes. I want my child to have, you know, red hair or yellow hair or blonde, whatever. And then you get to scenarios like this where everything is controlled. You know, there's only these approved literatures that you can have. Like, I think, isn't it Shakespeare that's kind of been, for the most part, banned?
And most of them, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And, but it's okay if we have Freud, who I think, isn't he referred to as like our Freud? And like, Henry Ford is like kind of like this messianic figure. They call him R. Ford instead of Lord.
Oh, yeah. And then the years are counted as like after Ford or whatever.
Yeah. It's a wild ride. Is there anything else you want to like take from that? Go ahead, John.
I was going to mention, you know, that everyone takes these like drug vacations. Like they've got everybody like drugged up on the Soma. And they
And then it's they encourage like however many partners you have, like sexual partners, and they like keep tallies of however many they have, and they're not encouraged to stay with one specific partner for too long or else they get bored. And it's crazy to think of that because, I mean, you know, John and I have been married for 11 years, so we never had another partner. And it's like, I get embarrassed when somebody talks about, you know, having a boyfriend for less than a week or something. But it's like, it's crazy to think of something like that.
Yeah. And you can write whatever scenario you want as an author in that sense.
Yeah.
If you want to focus on sexuality, you can do that. If you want to like completely disregard it, you can do that. And one of the things he does there is with that, and also with like the body as a whole. Soma is from the Greek. It means body. And the drug in this world is just used as a way for people to escape from reality for a little bit, as a way of placating the masses.
Yeah.
All right. Well, unless there's anything else, I think it's time to be hitting the old dusty trail into the next topic.
If you'd like to support our show on Captivate, feel free to go to captivate.fm and find our show, subscribe. You'll get access to any future online D&D campaigns over there. You'll get an extra bonus question for 4 to 8 times a month. You'll get extra content like that through there. You also get a one-time donation you could make to help support the show right on Captivate. So you don't get anything for the one-time donation, but if you would like to just support the show once, do a quick donation, you can do that through captivate.fm. Our overhead includes editing software, marketing, equipment, recording software, and a whole lot of other stuff. And we really appreciate everybody who can help keep the lights on.
Which I think might be TJ. Oh, sorry, I said his name. No, it's me.
Stephen King.
The Stand by Stephen King. Now, I know there's going to be some people out there. This is not dystopian. Let me argue for it. This is primarily post-apocalyptic. I will grant you that. But the dystopian does come in here. For those of you who have never read Stephen King's The Stand, and like, what are you doing? Like, stop listening to this. Read all 1,100, 1,200 pages and get back to me. I expect a full book report in the morning.
I like Stephen King, so.
Yeah, it's actually the first novel I ever read by him, which just shows my English teacher knew what I liked and decided, if you want to start with Stephen King, and I know you like reading long things, start with this. So shout out to
long things. Michael,
you're the best.
Ulysses.
My sister, why don't you have a copy?
Yeah, no, I would never read Ulysses for fun. I saw what Niles, friend of the show, Niles, had to go through for his class. And on principle, out of solidarity for my brother, I will not read Ulysses.
Ulysses is pretty long. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it had like his grocery list and receipts and all kinds. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I remember him being just like a miserable wreck trying to read that book and trying to work for it. Yeah, but we're off topic. We're talking about The Stand. So the basic premise of The Stand is, and I know some people may be a little sensitive about this since we just kind of went through a very minor version of what happens here. This plague, this government-engineered plague, is let loose into the world, kills off 99.4% of the population, which you think, oh, man, it's such a big number. There's no humanity left. No, the number does match out. There's still going to be plenty of people left for the conflicts needed for this. And it just ravages through the entire world. We have a demonic figure, Randall Flagg, who is kind of our beast figure in here, rallying people around him on the western side of the United States, focusing in Las Vegas, which is where the dystopia kind of comes in, is how he creates and controls this world around him, trying to recreate the world in his image to be worshipped as God in certain respects. And then we have Mother Abigail on the more eastern side of the United States that then does move a little western into Boulder, Colorado, where she is our big good. She contacts people through dreams to try and guide them so that they can create the society as like a way to fight against the machinations of Randall Flagg. And hey, questions being brought up like, is the government a good thing? Should we go more anarchy? Should we, if we recreate the things of the past, are we just going to make the same mistakes of the past? Is it an inevitability? Are we going to be able to survive? Are babies going to live because we still have whatever that disease is in us? We just happen to be immune. Are we going to be able to survive as a species? Are we going to be able to look ourselves in the mirror and say, I did what I had to do in order to survive, or I was a good person and I still managed to keep my ideals? It's all over the place. Like I said, this 1,100, 1,200 page book, but I love every moment of it to explore the ideas of, he focuses on some chapters on people who literally exist in a narrative for a couple of paragraphs and then they die. But you get so much into their heads and see, like, these were real people being massacred by this immensely almost biblical plague that they have no way to fight against. Governments collapse. Like, what are we supposed to do? And how do we fight against a force that is literally demonically led? While we do have someone who says she's working with God over here, but it doesn't seem like God has a lot of power here. So with all that in mind, what do you guys think?
It sounds really unique, kind of like not necessarily like a good versus evil, but kind of like a lesser evil versus a greater evil. Because, you know, dystopians.
Okay. maybe I just explained that poorly. Like, they are, our guys in Boulder, Colorado, are the good guys for a certain sense. It's more them questioning, are we the good guys if we try to recreate society as we knew it, even though we know society had all these flaws?
Okay. Okay.
I was going to say, that reminds me I'm getting tongue-tied for a second, thinking of my brain's moving faster than my mouth can move, and, you know, it takes me a long time to formulate words, but...
That was longer than it needed to be.
Yeah, so you panic and say a lot of words, hoping the filler words come back?
Yes. Exactly. That's exactly what happened. I was like, oh my God, I lost my thought. It's
called panic ramble. Yes.
Gotta pull it back. Fallout. It reminds me of the Fallout video games, where it's kind of...
Yes.
It's post-apocalyptic, but it can be considered dystopian because of just the way that societies are. I mean, you're basically mining resources and all the there's governments. I mean, you got the enclave and other things that they're just corruption all over the place, and it's every man for himself. And it's it's a rough living.
Yeah, it's not a perfect story by any stretch of the imagination. It's still one I would give a 10 out of 10 at the end of the day. I have my gripes. I mean, there's a quite literal Deus Ex Machina at some point in time that I do feel is foreshadowed, and you can make work. I think he also was trying to figure out, man, I've been writing for so long, I kind of needed an ending. And that's kind of what happened. But yeah, guys, if you haven't checked it out, if you want to get into King and you're not like me and you can handle 1,200 pages your first time around, go something smaller, do Carrie or Salem's Lot, and then get into It and the Stand, where you're going to be there for a while. So that was my number two pick. Well, speaking of Fallout, they're not here, this mysterious person who I definitely name checked earlier. But since John mentioned it, we might as well go ahead and talk about it.
Oh my God.
Their second pick.
That's hilarious. I didn't even know what the other people's picks were, and I just happened to mention that.
Yeah. So as it is here, Fallout, actually, TJ and I just recorded an episode on it for a primarily political series as of this recording that should be dropping not too long from now. It'll be dropping before this episode gets released. And we talked about the politics therein. But as far as why people look at it as a dystopia, this is 200 years after a nuclear conflict between the United States and China has pretty much ravaged the entire world. There are people who were put into vaults beforehand who were able to survive. They're a little more, not genetically pure. The wrong way of looking at that is that they're not as affected by the radiation as, imagine that, people who had to live outside the vaults. So you have different systems in place with some of them in some of these games. Like, I picked New Vegas because that's my favorite. And you have ideas of like, okay, this is how we're going to run things. Vault Tech, the person behind creating these, was also working with the Enclave that John mentioned earlier. They being the remnants of the United States government who saw the writing on the wall and decided to hide for a little bit, gather their time and resources, and then try and take over America again on the West Coast and then on the East Coast in Fallout 3. And you see all these communities trying to fight back, trying to like gain some semblance of old society. You have like the NCR, which is basically your democracy on the West. You have, you know, the Institute on the East Coast, which is more like science based, more stupid evil, in my opinion, in some respects. And you have like the eastern side of the Brotherhood of Steel, Brotherhood of Steel being this organization that trying to control technology, knowing it was because of technology that this entire war happened in the first place, making sure, in their opinion, the right people get technology. And they're some are more fascist than they're going. Then you have the East Coast Brotherhood, who started off being more friendlier until they got taken over by Arthur Maxson in 4, and it become a bit more like the West Coast Brotherhood. It's all over the place. There's tons of different things we could use for this. John, do you have anything you want to say?
I just have a lot of very strong memories of you playing this game for hours and hours and hours on end and hearing the song of, was it The Big Iron on His Hip, just playing over and over in my head from when we were in college.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, so good. Yeah, Barbara, I'm guessing you never played.
No, I've never played it, but it's on my very long list of two-play games.
Hey, that list never seems to go down, no matter how much you play. I get it.
No.
There's just so much you missed out on, you know, being young and poor and not having the newest gaming system right when it came out. I get it.
Yeah.
But if that mysterious fourth person were to show up here, I'll let them talk about it. But we've moved on from there to our top picks. But before we get there, does anyone have any honorable mentions before we get to their number one pick?
Definitely the Maze Runner is an honorable mention for me.
Okay.
It's a, again, kind of a post-apocalyptic, but it is kind of dystopian, especially when with that one city where everyone's living in like a utopian paradise and everyone on the outside is like ravaged by this disease and trying to break into this and punish the rich, you know, the whatever society, aristocrat.
Whatever society.
The word escaped me. I was looking for aristocrat, but I was thinking Democrat, and I'm like,
words fail you, huh?
Whatever.
Yes, the whatever society. This is my favorite part of the Maze Runner series.
Words have been escaping me. Anything?
I can't remember the name of it. There's a short story that I read in high school, also required by the school, but I would have read it on my own anyway. No offense. But it had the theme of society, all the smart people with a higher IQ or anybody who is resistant to the I guess it was like the military or the government had chips implanted in their heads. So then whenever they had an independent thought, like anything independent of what the government wanted, they would either play a loud noise or they would do something for the chip, give them a migraine, and then they would forget whatever they were thinking of. So then that in turn made them equal to the not as smart people in society. Not as smart people.
Yeah.
In the same with the ugly people versus the beautiful people, where the beautiful people had to wear masks, like these grotesque masks, and the graceful dancers had to be weighed down with weights and all sorts of stuff. And then it was like the theme of the story is this really ugly guy ended up breaking free from that, and he took a dancer who was forced to wear like all these weights and a mask, and they broke free from that. But then once they broke outside of the like the building that they were in like some sort of news station, they ended up being shot. It was very sudden at the very end, but it was like it just the idea that like the government wants us all to be the same instead of independent and having original ideas and thoughts. It was just kind of scary in a way. It was a very good story, very well written though. I just for the life of me can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain I haven't read that. Otherwise, I would have looked it up.
Yeah, it's a very good story. I cannot remember what it's called. I'll have to look it up when we're done here. Because I don't want to read it again.
Jog a memory. Are you saying that? Oh, go ahead, John.
I was going to say I got one more honorable mention, but you finish your thought.
Yeah.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay.
Well, it's one we all share. One that brings back happy memories of our junior year at UNCW in English class. And this magnificent story. The ones who walk away from a Malus, where the general gist of the story is that there is a utopia out there where people aren't worried about anything. They have all the food they need, they have all the the water that they need, all the supplies they need, at the cost of a single person kind of and essentially taking on all their evil and sin that lives in complete and utter darkness and misery. And the reason why we would all find this funny is because we were asked by our professor. I was asked directly by a professor, and he pointed at John, not knowing that we were friends. Could you live in a society like this, knowing that he was the one who had to suffer? And I looked him right in the face, and I said, absolutely yes.
It's perfect. It could not have been better.
Oh, my gosh.
He gave me a look. He was like, I don't know about that guy.
This was when Killjohn was still ongoing.
Oh, yes.
So my goodness, you guys.
Yeah, idea of the story is that, yeah, it's a utopia, but is it actually a dystopia because of the cost? Living at the idea of, I'm okay, but this one person isn't. If everyone else is okay, but one person isn't, is that worth living in? Now, obviously, I would say, if I was actually giving an answer, no, I would not want to live in such a system. That person does not deserve that. That was just so funny. He couldn't have planned it better if he tried. He didn't know we were friends. He didn't know that we routinely played games where we try to kill John. It's fun. So there's that. I'll add that to my honorable mentions. John, you had something you wanted to say?
No, I just Kill John needs to be brought back in this stream. I know it used to be an ongoing running gag all the time, and we really disturbed our Christian college mates every time we started playing it. They're just like, "What's going on?"
I had Eddie pull me aside one time, being like, "Do you hate John?"
Oh gosh.
No, let me explain. He's in on the joke. He likes it.
It's funny. I like the attention.
Yeah. I'm glad they were so attentive to your needs there. They cared about you. So that's nice.
They did.
Basically, it just started because once again, we played with Niles back in the day with Risk. Pretty much it was like every Monday night at one point in time. And Niles and I kind of just figured out, we keep like at this where we've kind of got this thing going where like you would win and I would win, but John might win every now and then, but mostly it's Niles and I winning. And the winning condition was whoever killed John's troops first. So that just got split out from there to like every single thing we would play.
Even our literature sentences in our editing class, we ended up including kill John in that. And we disturbed our teacher and they had to change the rules of the program to make sure they didn't talk about students anymore.
That's right, because I took editing after the two of you, and he actually mentioned that in my class, you guys. He did.
I died pretty horrible death.
It was glorious. Okay, so with all that in mind, now we've gone on tangent after tangent, I'll give my honorable mentions, and I have quite the list, imagine that. So, in no particular order, Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah.
Attack on Titan. Blade Runner. Swan Song. Robert McCammon. Days of Future Past. Great X-Men story. The Promised Neverland. Samurai Jack. Logan's Run. The Book of Eli. Ghost in the Shell. And The Road Warrior.
I've got one more.
Okay. What?
The Island.
One more?
The Island.
Oh, The Island. That's a good one. Okay. Now, with all that preamble, we're going to our top picks. And that, of course, being Barbara's, yay! Her number one is The Hunger Games.
The Hunger Games.
Have at it.
Oh, I know. I just like the entire plot line was really well written, I think. The idea of taking like one representative from each of the different districts and then just pitting them against each other. And then the wrench that Katniss throws in by actually volunteering to save her sister's life. It's just the sacrifice that she did for her sister was really, really something that kind of reminded me and my big sister, because she's, you know, 7 years older than I am. And so she looked out for me a lot, even when it came to my parents kind of favoring my middle sister. We bonded over anime and stuff together. So it's just like that relationship between Katniss and her sister. And then just sitting there and reading the story as, you know, the backgrounds unfurled and then the different types of death was really interesting, even though it was kind of morbid at the same time. And then, you know, just it was a good story, in my opinion. And I don't really get too excited about things very much.
Yeah, this was one of those. I heard about the movie coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and read the book first. And I think Catching Fire was out at that point in time.
Yeah.
And like, not rushing, just went through it. It's like, oh man, this is so much fun. I love the idea they're building here with like the 12 districts and what's left over of America, mm-hmm. some being more economically well off than others. So you have like Appalachia here is like District 12, the poorer, the coal miners and all that mess, mm-hmm. Playing to real life things as well there. You have, you know, Pan Am, the name of the country coming from the Latin term, Pan Am at circuses. It ends up translating as like bread and circuses.
Yeah.
That comes from the Roman idea of, if we give the people enough entertainment, you know, we have bloodbaths in the arena, in the Colosseum, from gladiators fighting, or we have actual naval battles fought in the Colosseum, or chariot races, or what have you. As long as the people's attention is focused here and they're placated in that regard, they can bet on whatever they want. Well, they're not going to worry about what I'm doing over here, you know, exactly. Taking their freedoms away from them. Like, is extremely well played here. and how the Capitol handles that.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, distracting the civilization with your left hand as to what your right hand is doing, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
John, you have something you want to add?
I haven't read it, and I haven't seen the movies, so I am unfortunately completely out on the limb here.
Boo, John. Okay, you know what? You and I are going to have to watch some movies then.
Add it to our growing list.
I legitimately cannot believe that. I thought you went to see those movies with us. Were you working or something that night?
I remember I was working like three or four jobs at that time. Yeah. I was always working.
You went to back in the day just to have some scratch.
I'm trying to think of when did I go see them? Because I've seen the movies. Maybe I went with my sister, because actually Liz really likes the Hunger Games, and she doesn't read all that often. No offense to her, but she actually introduced me to the Hunger Games.
Sibling slam.
Offense taken.
Christina is the one that introduced me to Tolkien and a lot of the fantasy realm, and like Mercedes Lakey. And like that's another fantasy series that I really enjoy, is like all of her books. But Liz is more into like dystopian and vampires and Twilight. And I'm not.
Boo, Twilight.
We do live in a dystopian world because those exist in our world. And I can say that because I've read every single one, because I believe if you want to criticize something, you interact with it. So I did it, so you didn't have to. Sorry, I got you off track. What else about the Hunger Games?
Right? No, really,
like, really, like, brings you to it as a series.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, I honestly thought that the movies were okay. Like, there are a lot of movies that don't really encompass everything that a book has to offer, I think. Like, especially, like, Harry Potter towards the end. But, like, the first two, I think, were okay. But then it kind of went a little downhill from there, at least in my opinion.
I'll agree. Mockingjay wasn't as good as the other two. Because mm-hmm. Catching Fire is my favorite in the series. I mean, we get introduced to my boy Fennec. How could I not love it? And it kind of like, oh no, we're repeating the past. And I got kind of angry with that when that happens. When you have like, hey, we finally beaten the Capitol. You know, we found this other district here is still around. And we're going to make them do the exact same thing. We're going to have our own Hunger Games and force them to do it. It's like, are you that tone deaf? Like no one's that stupid. And then growing up, part of life, you realize, oh yeah, there are people stupid enough to have not learned their lesson and to have forced another round of these. You know, if we don't fight against those ideas, it's going to happen again. We have to prevent that from being a thing. Yeah, I have a better appreciation for Mockingjay now than when I first read it. But with that in mind, I believe the next one on the list, oh, this would have been our mysterious fourth host, his pick. I have not played these games, so I have nothing to say on them. So if you're on YouTube, you can see it. But if you're not, you're on the podcast, well, you don't get to see it. I'm not going to say it. So I'm going to force you to come to YouTube and look at the image.
No. Got a run of Hong Kong?
Then we get to finally something John can say about his autobiography.
Yay. Autobiography? I'm a pig? Is that what you're calling me? Is it because I was a law enforcement?
John says all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going for the, I'm a pig.
Well, that too. Well, you were a pig. You got, yes. Yeah, that happened.
Donut eating cop. Don't knock the donuts.
Have at it,
yes. Animal Farm is probably one of my favorites just because it highlights like tactics of shaming like another leader or someone to get them out of the way so you can have total control. But it starts out where the animals revolt against the farmer and they drive the farmer out. There was and Napoleon and Snowball. Napoleon was a little bit, I think, more the severe controlling one, and Snowball, they all wanted a utopian society, you know, away from the farmer, and they wanted, you know, of course the number one rule was all animals are equal. And when Snowball and Napoleon had a disagreement, Napoleon drove Snowball out, and then he assumed total control and became a chaotic dictator and began basically enslaving the other animals so that he could have a better life where they instead of everyone being a middle class, it ended up being like an extreme high class for Napoleon and his cronies, and then everybody else was just the low poor class working. And when they got old, they were shipped off to the meat farms or whatever.
Yeah, this is the classic. Surprisingly, for the third time today, I was not forced to read this in high school. I read it in high school of my own accord.
Where did you go to school?
I've actually never read this
in high school. Yeah, well, I got my education in Lincoln County. Okay.
Nerd.
I learned it. I learned good stuff.
You learned it and learned other good stuff too?
Yes. So this one, a friend of mine had actually borrowed this, gave me this to check it out. And I was blown away once again. Like, hey, these are new concepts to young, dumb, idiot high schooler Christian, who once again is very grateful he was not forced to read this because I would probably hate it as much as I do The Awakening, which is a very terrible book anyways. So there's that. But Animal Farm was one of those books reading is like, oh, I get it. This is us. We, you know, we break the shackles of former leaders and oppressors before and allow them to come back in a different form. And it happens time and time again because of the language that they use, the way they insidiously snake their way back into society under a new name or a new philosophy that is really just rehashing what was done before, but said in this brand new spiffy way that sounds good. And you have like, yeah, oh, four legs good, two legs bad, except when it's not. And, you know, then we have humans helping out. It's okay, guys. They're not the farmer. You remember the farmer. We hated the farmer. But these guys, they've got our backs as long as Napoleon remains in charge, as long as it's no coincidence his name is Napoleon, like kind of obvious where it comes from. And leading these other animals to the point where they end up in the exact same scenario before. Really, the only thing that's changed is Napoleon is on top and has become essentially the man in this instinct, in this way, and that he's bringing devastation. He's bringing control that they didn't want. They wanted to be free from it, but people are sheep or animals sometimes, and we let these things be recursive.
Yeah, and it was much worse for the society because they built all these like machines, a windmill and all this other stuff, and they were ended up forced to do hard labor. And of course, they blamed all their problems, everything, and they just threw shade at Snowball and blamed everything on Snowball, even though Snowball had nothing to do with it. And they were originally partners in the deal. And then everything became Snowball's fault. Every bad thing just became, you know, blame Snowball, blame the president. You know, we can relate this all day to our society. And it reminds me a lot of Battlestar Galactica when Baltar was president and he was forced to make a bunch of terrible decisions because he had a gun pointed to his head. But, They're like, at least a human's in charge, right? But it's really the Cylons who run the show. But at least the pig's in charge, right? Not the farmer, but it's the same deal.
Very much so. And if you haven't already, guys, check out the primarily political episode we did on Battlestar Galactica, Trip and I. Ton of fun. Do you guys have anything else you want to add to this?
No, not really, since I haven't read it.
You haven't read it?
Okay.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
I read something you haven't. Yay.
You know what, Barbara? That's okay. It's okay that you haven't read this. I would be very upset if someone else here hadn't read it.
I know. I get the negative points. No, wait. It was always, I stay even.
But, yeah. Yeah, we had another system where an ex-friend of ours now, he can only stay in the negatives. John could only stay at zero, and I was always positive. No matter what bad thing I did, there had to be another compliment. So as you can see, it's always been about me. I can't imagine why. But yeah, solid first pick, John. Like Animal Farm, like that's a reason we do keep reading it over and over again. It's a fantastic story. One that is just as applicable today as it was when it was written. Now, on to something completely different. My number one pick, 20th Century Boys by Naoki Urasawa. Now, if you've been watching this on YouTube, you've seen the appellation I have underneath my name, Enemy of Friend. This is why. Not because I'm making a pun, but because it makes sense in context here. So, gather around, children. Let me tell you a tale of 20th Century Boys. This is kind of the magnum opus of Naoki Urasawa, who started writing this around the beginning of the new millennium, just a couple of months before. And it takes place over different times. There's this parts in the 60s and 70s. Then we get into 90s, the 2000s, and then the 2015, I think, is where we kind of end up near the end. If I'm remembering correctly, it's also been a while since I've read this. But part of the process is they had the main character had a group of friends, a bunch of guys, one girl. They would always work together. They would talk about the anime they were watching, or they'd talk about the tokusatsu shows. They'd pretend to be Ultraman for the day, and they'd have all these grand ideas. So, you know, like kids do, of we're going to be big out there. We're going to change the world. We're going to be heroes one day. And one of their number took it a little more seriously than the rest. And there's more things involved there, but for the sake of time, I'll just say this one person ends up starting a cult where they name themselves Friend, as in, I am your friend. I am the one who can lead you to enlightenment, to guidance, and all this. And the big mystery of the whole series is who is Friend? Which one of us was it? As they have this high school reunion later on, and one of their number dies. Like, can we trust the people around us? Now you're wondering, where does the dystopia come in? Well, I'll get you there. Just trust me. Along the way, the heroes lose. That's not a big spoiler. It just kind of happens. So there's a time skip to around 2015, and Friend and everyone there has taken control of the world. There's some shenanigans with which Friend it is, but I'm not going to bore you with those details. And that's where the dystopia comes in. Friend is in control. He is your friend. He is literally watching over the entire, he has the whole world in his hands, which is definitely the imagery that Urasawa is using here. That old classic song most of us used to sing in Sunday school. He's got the whole world in his hands. Well, Friend is doing that. World. Yeah. For your benefit. Because he's your friend. He wants what's best for you. Except they're doing it just so this guy can go out through his ego trip and be in control of the entire world because of how he was slighted in the past, because of how he was hurt in the past. And he's putting all of his insecurities onto other people, enforcing this rule over the world that puts him on top and makes everyone worship him as a god. And then the people who are remaining after the initial loss fight against Friend and try to find a way to take him down. This is, I'm not joking, this is my favorite piece of fictional media ever, not my favorite dystopian story. If this were to get an anime, it'd be my number one anime. Right now, it's my number one manga. I love this. 22 volumes, a ton of good fun. Guys, I've talked enough. What do you think? I know none of you have read this before. What do you think?
It sounds intriguing. I mean, the fact that, you know, a child has this mindset of like, this is what I'm gonna do when I grow up, and then he actually achieves it. But it's not something like becoming a doctor or a firefighter or something like that is becoming the ruler of the world. It's sounds really interesting.
Sounds horrifying. Sounds like, you know,
so I go with interesting, you go with horrifying.
Sounds like Thanos, but on like a smaller scale, of just like Earth-wide scale, where it's just like, I'm going to, you know, control society and make everyone, you know, everyone
bow before me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I could gush about the series. I would love to do an episode on it, but I need to have someone who's actually read it with me on the episode, because it couldn't just be me talking. You know, I could do that, but would it be that interesting? Probably not. But like, when I think of dystopias, I think of different scenarios, like who is in charge? How horrifying would it be in that scenario? Yeah, sure, it'd be really horrifying to live with only 99.4% of the population around for the stand. But what if everyone was still around, and out of the billions of people on the planet, I was one of the few people saying, no, this is not how things are supposed to go. That horrifies me. And yet it's still a fight worth fighting. And I'm not going to spoil how it ends, but I enjoy how this ends. And if you know me from anything that I've read before, if you think this is going to have a downer ending, then you obviously don't know me. So that's that. Everything to say, those are our top three. Our unfortunate fourth host, our ghost host, does not exist, never existed apparently.
Ghost host.
So it's going to be the three of us. So with all that in mind, guys, as we're wrapping these things up, do you have any recommendations for the audience?
If I was going to recommend something, I would definitely recommend if I was going to recommend dystopian media, I would recommend like The Island. And so I think Shutter Island's up there too. There's a lot of good dystopian things. And like on The Island, where they harvest the organs of these clones for the betterment of regular society.
Barbara?
Well, like I said, I'm not really into dystopian stories.
It doesn't have to be dystopian. It could be just anything in general.
Recommendations, probably Final Fantasy VII. Like I said, I'm playing through it. It is really unique with all the new little nuances that they put in there. Like, I'm trying not to spoil it too much for you, but I like just finished a part where I'm like playing a piano, and I thought I would fail horribly, but it's actually a lot of fun. It's like I'm like a semi-perfectionist where I want to try to at least get A on everything. So I'm like sitting there for like 30 minutes just playing this one piano song over and over again. But it's a lot of fun, actually.
Very nice. Yeah, I'll stick with Dystopian for a little bit. One I didn't add to my honorable mentions, but it's still a really great movie. And my caveat is I have never once read a Judge Dredd comic. I know they're super popular in Britain, some a little bit in America, but the movie Dredd, I think Carl Urban is playing him. It is utterly fantastic. The fact that this movie did not get a sequel is a testament to the fact that this world needs to end at some point in time. It's just great. Like, you guys should check it out if you haven't had a chance, but thank you all for listening. If you want to get into this conversation, if you have a list of your own and you want to send it our way, it could be 3, it could be 5, it could be 10, just go to our Discord, go to Facebook, let us know. Hey, here's what I thought of your list. Here's what I think my list is. Let us know. I'd be happy to read it. Give you some feedback. Mm-hmm. As well, guys, if you get a chance to join our Patreon. So I'm going to shout out some patrons tonight. Thank you for all you do. Ethan Overcash, Austin Nance, and Amber Riley. You guys are the best, helping to keep the lights on here. We literally could not do this without you. But remember, we are all a chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hello, friends. If you enjoy Systematic Ecology, a great way to support us and to keep us moving forward into the future is to be a patron on our Patreon network. If you're a Patreon, then you get live access to our YouTube exclusives like comic book ketchup and manga mustard, drinks with Tejas, and also some extra content there with our companion series to go along with our annual theme. If you're a patron, you get exclusive merch like t-shirts and handbags and mugs. There's also a bonus extra question that has extra content. In each episode, we go deeper into our faith and the questions that we're wrestling with, but we also do this extra question to jump in and share about, and patrons get to hear how we answer that question. There's discounts on our store. You get access to any future online D&D campaigns. You can easily access all of our Patreon content through our Spotify page where it says exclusive content for subscribers. That could be you, folks. And all that being said, you get the satisfaction that you help us keep the lights on and keep us moving forward with our software, our marketing, our equipment, staying current in the podcast game. We love Systematic Ecology. We hope you do too. Support us moving forward. Thank you for all that you are. We know there's a lot of great choices and content out there, and you choose to listen to Systematic Ecology. Thanks, folks. We love you. Peace. Hey friends, this is your pal, Will Rose, and I have some exciting news. Systematic Ecology will return to Theology Beer Camp this year, October 17th through the 19th in Denver, Colorado. And we hope that you can join us. We are part of Theology Beer Camp in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, at my home church in my hometown. And that year, Theology Beer Camp was called the God Pods. And then we were in Missouri, a part of the Geek Stage. Yes, we had a whole entire Geek Stage where we had workshops and speakers and had incredible conversations. And Theology Beer Camp last year was called the God Pods Strike Back. So you kind of see where this is going. And so this year, the theme is the return of the God Pods. And so if you head over to Eventbrite and follow God Pods 2024, or hop over to Instagram, follow it there. And if you enter promo code Geekshire, you see what we did there? Yeah. Wilbo Baggins approves. If you enter Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, you'll get $25 off your ticket price. Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, Geekshire. Yeah, say it with me, Geekshire. Enter that. You get money off your ticket and you can join us and hang out and drink beer and have great food. And even if you don't drink beer, you can have incredible food and beverages and conversations with your favorite host here at Systematic Ecology. The Geek Stage is growing. I'm proud of that. And we thank Tripp for this opportunity. We hope to see you at Theology Beer Camp, the Return of the God Pods 2024.